Hello, friends. It me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater.
And we're here with yet another episode of What Page Are You On? Hello, my good bitch. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I am fine. You have been at Westfield this morning, which can be quite traumatic. How was it?
You know what? We got up early. We're recording on a Wednesday, which both me and my husband have off. So we got up nice and early, well, like 10, and then went to Westfield, so it was really quiet. And did some shopping, went to Foyles, looked at the books. I saw a book that I have never heard of, right? Which has been a top 10 bestseller in Japan since it was released. In 1948.
What the fuck? Tell me.
It's called No Longer Human by Osamu Dazai.
I have literally never heard of that in my life. That is so cool.
Right? Yeah. And like, I've never seen it in any other bookshop either. It's the second best-selling novel ever in Japan.
Huh.
Isn't that wild?
That is so wild.
Anyway, I didn't buy it, but I might buy it in the new year, because I'm curious. It's about, like, a dirt bag, which is very my vibe.
A 1940s dirt bag?
Yeah.
Historical dirt baggery. Like,
I was like, historical dirt bags. I was like, okay, so this sounds like kind of the Japanese answer to Bukowski. Do I care for Bukowski at my big age? Not really. Do I care about Japanese fiction, however? Yes, I do, so...
Yeah, and like, you know, it's always interesting. I always think it is interesting to have like another culture's perspective on stuff that feels well worn.
Oh, absolutely. And like, if this is 1948, it's actually pre-Bukowski.
So true, bestie.
So no, that's what I've been doing. How are you? What have you been doing?
You know, just not working too hard, bopping around, living my life, doing my crochet. That's, you know, all I got going on right now.
Just living your best life.
Living my best little wintry life. And as it is winter, that means we are coming to the end of 2021. So here we are, me and Alice, today presenting you with our wrapping up episode for the year. You know, maybe it's a little bit early. Maybe you wanted a couple more episodes out of us, but you're not going to get them. This is it. This is our last episode of the year.
Mom's tired, okay?
Mommies are tired. Mommies they want to really have a Christmas tired. Break. As I just said, I've been working so hard. And, you know, been bopping around doing my crochet, hard work.
It's time for our month of rest and relaxation before
yes,
we return
exactly.
in January, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, with lots of books under our tails, ready to share in the new year.
Yeah, because obviously, as we said last week, maybe you listened to it, maybe you didn't. Maybe in previous years, we'd have done a sort of books we're looking forward to next year episode as well. But because that has often bitten us on the ass, we decided to not do that again. This is it. This is the big one. Shall we kick it off? So we're not going to kick off with our top 10. We're going to do a little reading tag that you saw on, was it YouTube or was it TikTok?
It was YouTube. Friend. It's the end of year reading tag. And I believe I saw it on Lauren and the Books' channel, who I really love. So if you're looking for a YouTube channel to watch, she's very cozy and fun. But lots of people do it. So you can search the tag and see all sorts of fun on there.
And then we'll move on to our top 10.
Yes, the dreaded top 10, which has just been an absolute nightmare for me. I've had a really hard time, but that's a good thing because it means actually it's been a great reading year.
Yes. Cool. Would you like to begin?
Yes. Okay, so the first question on the end of your book tag is, are there any books that you've started this year that you still need to finish?
Yes, I have two physical books that I started reading that I have not finished and one audiobook. So my two physical books are Something New Under the Sun by Alexandra Kleeman, who wrote You Two Can Have a Body Like Mine, historic fave of the pod. I started reading it while I was sort of out and about and read maybe like 10 pages and then started reading something else with the complete intention to return to it. Have not as yet. So I will come back to Something New Under the Sun because it looks interesting and I so enjoyed her last book. And then the second physical book that I am planning to finish this year that I have not finished, cannot believe I haven't finished it. It's just because it's so big and I read half of it and then abandoned it with the intention of returning to it. Empire of Pain by Patrick Radden Keefe, which is about the opioid crisis and the Sackler family, which is so good and so interesting and so full of like juicy info. And it's winning loads of prizes, as we know, because we follow the publicist of the book, Grace Harrison, legend, on social media. So she's been going to all of these soirees to celebrate the book. And yeah, I really want to finish it because I'm loving it. I love his writing and I think it's a really interesting topic. Finally, I need to finish the audiobook of Transcendent Kingdom by Yaa Jessie, which I was so enjoying, but have not really been listening to audiobooks so much recently. I listened to And Then There Were None for the Agatha Christie episode, but in general have just been listening to my grubby little podcasts. I have not been listening to proper books on the audio.
Very unusual for you to be steering clear of the audiobooks. I barely recognise you.
I know. Yeah, I've just been... I think I've just found loads of poddies recently that I want to listen to, so that is what I've been tending towards while I make things and while I package things and do my business. How about you? What is still outstanding for you this year?
Well, I'm going to finish the Da Vinci Code.
Are you actually?
No!
Okay, just checking.
It went straight back into my book box. No, I've left that one behind me. So I haven't really picked up and then not completed many books that I have any intention of returning to. I've picked up a lot of books that I've not completed because I DNF'd them. I've had a really big year for not finishing stuff, but I did buy the Waterstones nonfiction book of the month. Last month was called 50 Words for Snow by Nancy Campbell. And it's like a nonfiction book about snow. And I really love nonfiction that's written in like short chapters, vignettes, like stuff that you can really pick up and read very slowly. But I want to like pick up the speed a little bit on that one because I want to finish it during winter. Not necessarily by the end of the year though, but you know, it's a winter book, so I want to finish that soon. And then I've also got two other nonfiction books I've also started, loved, and then not finished. One of which is Deep Sniff.
Yes.
Which we have discussed many times before. Deep Sniff by Adam Smith. So that's a history of poppers and queer futures. It's from one of my favourite indie presses, Repeater Books. I just think they're so cool. Everything they put out is really interesting and exciting. So, and that is such a unique kind of entryway into a queer history. Like, I'm really excited about that. And then the other nonfiction one that I want to finish this year that I've already started is Gay Bar by Jeremy Atherton Lynn, which is like a history of gay bars. Cool. So it's like kind of cultural all around the world, from leather parties in the Castro to gay liberation front touch-ins, from disco at Studio One to dark rooms in Vauxhall Railway Arches. I just think, again, like it's just a really cool, interesting part of like queer history that I'm really interested in. So I started that one. As I said, I have this terrible habit with nonfiction of starting it thinking like, yeah, that's wicked, and then not actually finishing it. So those are another two that I would like to try and finish by the end of the year.
Yeah, I feel like it is quite easy to put off or like kind of return to nonfiction. I'm more likely to do it with nonfiction than I am with fiction.
Because I don't feel like with nonfiction, I don't really worry too much about what I've forgotten or what I might have missed. It's generally not as important. And also, like, Alex, my husband, always says, like, the thing with nonfiction is that the start point and end point is always kind of decided by the author anyway. But, you know, you could always go back further, you know, or you could always start the story at an earlier point, and you could also always finish it later as well. So, yeah, it's much more flexible in terms of when you pick it up and when you drop it. So those two. And yeah, that's it for me. I think everything else, I don't think I've got any audiobooks that are still hanging over my head.
I am happy about this.
Good.
So next cue. Is there a new release that you're still waiting for? So our understanding of these tags is maybe that they were intended to be done slightly earlier in the year. So maybe the answer is no, but I would like to contextualize this question with that caveat.
Yeah, I mean, I think December, as I think we've said previously, December in publishing, generally, there's nothing really coming out. Anything that is still being released is going to be Christmas-related stuff. So, like, little comedy, like, humour titles, generally celebrity-fronted stuff, things like the Viz Annual, Private Eye, nothing for me, you know? Like, this is not the time of year for me. So no, there's nothing that I'm still waiting for.
I feel like, yeah, there's just nothing really. There's nothing left for me this year.
there's nothing. The year is over.
Yeah, dead to me.
The year is over. So do you have, are there any three books? So aside from the ones that you've started and want to finish, are there any three that you want to read before the year's up?
Yes. So I'd like to read Burnt Coat by Sarah Hall.
Nice, yeah.
I would like to read Must I Go by Yi Yun Lee, which I bought because I thought the cover was nice when I was in Rare Birds Books in Edinburgh on my little trip. It's got a really lovely pink cover. And then I would also like to read Mrs. March by Virginia Fato, because so many people I know have read it and love it. And I'm like, it's on my TBR, it's on my TBR. And I need to actually prioritize it on my TBR.
Yes. And I feel like it's one specifically that I feel like both you and fans of the pod will really enjoy.
Yeah. So I'm hyped to get to that one.
Yeah. Okay. I'm in agreement. I think I've only really got two. I think I have such a massive pile of proofs. But I was like, if I'm being realistic about what I actually think I'm going to be able to read by the end of the year. Yeah, I've just got two. I've got In the End, It Was All About Love.
Yep.
By Musa. Yes. And weirdly, okay. So this is actually my current read. I just started it yesterday. I also, the book that I finished book before last was Open Water. And Open Water and In the End, It Was All About Love have such a similar vibe.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, like they're both, not just the fact that they're both written by young black men, but they're also both written in the second person. Both seem to circle like love, yearning, and also what it is to be a young black man in a racist society. Like they just, and they're both like novellas.
Interesting.
Yeah, so they sit together really well. But also Open Water is by Caleb Azuma Nelson.
Yes.
We will talk about that one
later. We will be coming to that more later.
Yeah. But I've seen so many people have mentioned In the End, It Was All About Love on like their top 10 books of the year. So I'm really excited. And so far, I'm really enjoying it. Oh, another big difference between the two is that Open Water is set in London and In the End, It Was All About Love is set in Berlin. Mm. But yeah, I'm loving it. And then the other one that I'm hoping to read before the end of the year is Crying in H Mart.
Oh, yes, by Michelle Ozana.
Yeah, it's a memoir, and it's kind of about circling food, identity, and grief, which are all things I'm very interested in. So I'm really excited to read that. I just need to get my copy back from
Jennifer Tighe,
who I lent it to. So if I get it back before the end of the year, maybe I'll try and squeeze it in. Otherwise, it's one that I will prioritise at the beginning of next year. Because again, it's popping up on a lot of end of year lists.
Yeah, I'm kind of... I'm lukewarm interested in that one. It doesn't sound like something I would hate, but I'm not like gagging to read it.
Interesting. Okay, well, I'll report back. You can see what you think.
Let me know. LMK, do you think there is a book you have not yet read that you could be very surprised by and become one of your faves of the year?
So honestly, no.
Yeah,
because already we said we'd do a top 10. I already had a top 12, and now I'm kind of looking at a top 14. I just can't imagine squeezing anything else in. But I also feel like, I don't mind saying that, because although I've just listed all these books I think sound great, nonfiction is less likely to end up in my top 10 for me. So
yeah.
I think maybe last year I had Tiny Moons. I think that was it. And Tiny Moons was such a special book. Yeah, so no, I don't think there will be. What about you? Do you think you've got a potential lurking in your...
Probably not. I mean, I should probably have read Mrs. March earlier, just in case. But I'm pretty happy legit with what I've read.
That's legit. Okay, final question. Have you started making any reading plans for 2022?
Not like concrete plans, but I've received some proofs of stuff that I am hyped to read for next year that I thought I'm not going to read them. I'm not going to kind of prioritize reading them now. I'd rather just wait till a bit nearer the time, such as They by Kay Dick, which is a February issue. And I'm very excited because I feel like they are smashing it with their reissues. And then I'm also very hyped to read Idol by Louise O'Neill, who I love, who I think is the best. And her new book looks great. So those are a couple off the top of my head that I thought, yep, I'm looking forward to reading those. You'll probably name some and I'll be like, yes, 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 those two. I forgot about those. So why don't you tell me?
Okay, so, well, I've got two plans. First of all, I'm going to be starting my second book in January. I've already started planning it and plotting it and scheming. And so because I have found reading does get deprioritized when I'm also doing my day job, which is copywriting, and then writing in my free time, there's only so much you can do words-wise. But there are some books that are either set in the same place or are about themes that I'm writing about or are covering subject matters that I need to research. So I have like a mental list of books I need to procure that I will try and read to complement the early writing process. But then also I have too been saving my 2022 proofs. So I have one, a little something called Welcome to Your Life.
By whomst?
By none other than Bethany Rutter.
I'm so
excited. I already told you that I was going to save it for next year. So you know that one's coming. And then I've got What a Shame.
Abigail Bergstrom.
Yeah. I got that one, which just has the most striking cover. That alone has sold me. Then I've also got Brown Girls.
Yes.
It's right at the bottom of my pile, so I can't see who the author is on that one. But that's coming from Fourth Estate and looks absolutely sublime. I'm so excited for that. And then also we do have plans afoot to do a Dutch reading episode because we got sent a ton of Dutch books.
Yep.
By who sent them to us? It was
the Netherlands.
I think it's the at Read Dutch or Dutch New Writing. So we're going to do an episode basically featuring some of those. So I'm excited to get to them as well. That's it so far. You know, and then I've probably got a fair number of this year's bangers that I didn't get to that I will hopefully read next year. Like I have loads of thrillers. I haven't really read many thrillers this year.
Yeah, so do you know what? I observed that this year as well.
But there has been thrillers that have come out that have popped off, like Girl A, there's a new Will Dean, there's one called The Melting that came out from Picador. What else can I see here? Yeah, there's like been I've been sent like a good handful. I just haven't got around to them. I haven't prioritized them. So, yeah, maybe more thrillers for me next year.
Yeah, a thrilling 2022.
Indeed. All right, enough beating around the bush. Enough flirting with what might still be. Let's look back
at what has been.
2021.
Cool. So we have not consulted each other on these lists. That's just to clarify for the listeners at home. So we have created these lists completely independently of each other. There'll probably be quite a lot of crossover, but there may also not be. I don't know, could go either way. But yeah, we have not consulted each other at all. My personal list is not in any particular order. Is yours?
No, mine is not in any particular order either. All right, do you want to go first or shall I?
You kick us off.
Okay, I'm going to kick us off by doing what I did when we did our mid-year book lists, because there are two books that came out this year that are really close to my heart, but they're from really close friends, so it feels like sneaky to just include them in my top 10, but I want to hat tip them anyway, if I may.
You may.
Okay, so the first one is Yes, Yes, More, More by Anna Wood. I've probably mentioned this half a dozen times so far this year. I loved it so much. It's a short story collection. It's her debut. They all circle the same main character and her group of friends as she grows older. They're so fantastic. I just love them so much. So if you like short stories and you like, you know, interesting, cool, wild nights, northern female writers, like there's just so much to love. That's Yes, Yes, More, More by Anna Wood. And then the other one that I always feel like I have to hat tip because I loved it so much and I love her so much is Last House on Needless Street by Kat Ward. It's so hard to talk about this one without doing spoilers, but it is a thriller. It's kind of a horror slash thriller about a lonely guy who lives with his cat on Needless Street. And he's very interested in a missing persons case from several years ago. And then it's just about how that story kind of unfolds. It's so hard to describe without fucking it up. But yeah, those two books are really dear to my heart. So I have to give them a little hat tip. But then my first proper entry is Mrs. March by Virginia Feito, which we have already mentioned. I just love this so much. So it's a thriller. It has a very kind of Hitchcockian vibe, like a little bit kind of Rear Window-esque. It kind of reminds me of Atessa Moshfegh meets like Eileen. Atessa Moshfegh kind of meets Shirley Jackson meets Stephanie DeMaurier. So it's about a woman whose husband is an author, and she discovers right at the beginning of the book that he has based a character in his latest novel on her. but this character is not the kind of person she would like to be associated with. So she feels deeply humiliated, and the character is like kind of actively quite repulsive. And so this completely shatters her world and her relationship with her husband and everything. But then it just ends up going on this like bizarre paranoid journey that begins in this bakery with this kind of casual remark and ends in just the most exciting of circumstances. I just loved it, and I can't believe that it took me this long in the year to get to it. You're just gonna love it. You're gonna love it. You're gonna love it.
Because I was sent not one but two copies of it, and I now have it on the Kindle, so I have literally no barriers to reading it.
You're in for such a treat. And I also, again, like what I keep saying is it just feels like so our kind of book.
Yeah.
I almost feel like if I hadn't been sent a copy, and I think I only got sent a copy because I saw it on Twitter and remarked, like, oh my God, this looks great, I would have missed it. Like, the cover doesn't quite reflect how kind of dark the book is, you know? Like, yes. The cover is... it only has like one kind of unheimlich element. There's a cockroach crawling on a woman's skirt, which I absolutely love, but it's almost too subtle. I think I would have missed this. So yeah. I'm really glad that I found it.
Well, I'm very excited to read it, and I am bummed that I did not read it before assembling my top 10 of the year, because I'm sure I will want to put it in there. Maybe, who knows?
Your 10. What's first on your list?
So first on my list, so I actually I mostly did this in chronological order of when I personally read it. So I went through my list of like books that I've read this year, which is kept in chronological order. So yeah, by accident I have sort of assembled my list in chronological order of when I read them, which yeah. is, you know, not necessarily scientific, but it is how I've written them down. So first on my list was Luster by Raven Lelani.
Aww.
Did she make it to yours? Well.
She certainly did.
So, I feel like we've talked about this one quite a lot. But, you know, just in case it has passed you by, Luster is about a young girl living in New York who is sort of early in her adult life and bouncing around in terms of, like, work and relationships, and gets into a relationship with a white guy who has a white wife but have adopted a black daughter, and is about her kind of interacting with that situation, as well as her general young person life as a young black woman living in New York. Would you say that is an accurate summary of what Luster is?
Yeah, bang on the money. I just really loved this book. I really loved the voice.
Agree.
It's written in this, like, I don't know, just a really interesting... on a line level, I just really liked it. Loved the rendering.
Bright and sparkly and fun to read, but also has depth. It's just yeah. really complete.
But like even the darker moments, it's just written with so much kind of, it's just written so beautifully. It's just so compelling. And it really fits the kind of micro genre that I adore, which is like messy women in their 20s. Falling into bad relationships, drinking too much, underthinking things, overthinking things. Like, it really fit into that bracket that I'm just really into.
Agree. How about you? What's next?
Yep, so speaking of which, the first book, so I read Luster in 2020, I think. So I think this was the first one I read in 2021 that fit into that microgenre that I love so dearly. But it's Night Shift. Night Shift by Kiara Ladner.
Which we did a whole episode on. So if you like the sound of what we are about to say, you can go back and listen to the episode. But we'll tell you about it now anyway.
Yeah, I mean, go back and listen, because that's going to be a fresher perspective. But this was probably one of the first books that I read this year that I was absolutely sucked into. And I feel like that when deciding what goes on my top 10 list, I really go by like what grabbed me the most. I kind of want, for a book to be on my top 10, generally I have to be absolutely swept away. I have to feel so compelled to finish it. I have to feel completely immersed, because that's really hard to achieve. And yeah, Night Shift really did that for me. It's about a 23-year-old called Maggie. A new girl starts at work called Sabine. She immediately feels very drawn to her. And when Sabine leaves there, leaves the job for night shifts. Meggie decides to apply for night shifts as well. She ends up leaving her partner, falling into this like weird liminal world of like working nights. It's a kind of obsession, but also a kind of romantic entanglement, and it all ends up going catastrophically wrong. It's also a book about loneliness and desire. It just really did it for me. Also, I found reading this book, there's so much in it that reminded me of my own book, which was almost scary because I was like, fuck, I hope that it's not going to seem as though this book was a massive influence. I'd already written my book. My book was already written by the time I read it, but mine isn't coming out until 23. But anyway, if you enjoyed Night Shift, I've got some other books on my top 10 that gave me that same feeling as well. But yeah, I'm obsessed with it. I loved it. And I can't wait to reread it because it ends up going in a direction, a much kind of more gentle and poignant place than I expected it to, based on the thrust of the novel. And that was only a good thing. It just really surprised me.
Agree. I really liked it. This would be in my kind of honorable mention section. It has not made it into my personal top 10, but it would definitely be in my, you know, top whatever.
See, that's the thing. I'm picking stuff that I don't think you will have picked. So hopefully we each manage to talk about an equal number of books, but I know we're going to have a massive overlap. So
yes,
trying to be clever with my order.
Tactical. Okay. So the next one on my list, which I remember we kind of semi-discussed this maybe last time we hung out, and I'm not sure whether it will have made it to your top 10 or if it will be an honourable mention, but next on my top 10 is Detransition Baby by Tori Peters.
Yes.
Did it make your cut?
So, as I said at the beginning, I've got a top 12. And then I had my two honourable mentions, which was Yes, Yes, More, More and The Last House on Needless Street. I think Detransition Baby is one that I would bump for one of the other books I'm going to bring up.
Mm.
So call Detransition Baby my number 11.
Yes.
But only just by a whisker.
I just love Detransition Baby. So we talked quite extensively about this as well earlier in the year. And I just loved, I just found it was so kind of loving and kind to quite a difficult protagonist of a lot of the story. And I just loved a kind of different way of looking at and thinking about like parenting and the decision whether or not to have a child. So having that from like a trans perspective was very interesting to me. And yeah, I just loved it. I loved every page. You know, even though, as we discussed, the kind of central premise, which is a cis woman and her detransitioned partner or kind of sexual partner, I can't remember if they're actually in a relationship by that point, find that the woman is pregnant and it is suggested that they could raise the baby with her partner's ex girlfriend who is also trans. So yeah, we discussed whether that kind of stretches credulity as to why that would be a thing that you would think of doing, but if you take for granted that it is a thing that they thought of doing, I loved it.
Yeah, and I think like having now watched multiple interviews with Tori Peters, I kind of feel like that was my original criticism. So if you go back and listen to our episode about Detransition Baby, then that's something I flag as just not, I just didn't buy it. Having now like heard her talk more as to why she wrote I can't remember her name now, the cis woman.
Cat.
Her cat, yeah. Having like learned more about her process and why she chose to write this one, Katrina maybe?
Yeah, maybe that's where I got Cat from.
So Katrina is written at more of a distance than Amy and Reese. Sorry, not Amy, Ames.
Ames.
Sorry, scanning the water zones description. So Ames and Reese are written with a much more immediate tone. Katrina is written at more of a distance, so you're less in her head as she's coming to the decisions, as she makes the decisions that she makes, etc. And that was just intentional on Tori Peters' part. She was like, I can't write the perspective of cis American Asian woman. I don't want to try and assume that I could, so I it was intentionally kept, that character was kept at a bit more of a distance. So that made sense to me. I accept that. I think also the reason why I ended up nudging out of my top 10 was just that the very core of the book is about motherhood, parenthood, having children, forming new families, which is ultimately not really a subject that is necessarily one that I'm that drawn to.
But yeah, those are like, so also the same for me, but I was like very happy to read something that held my attention, that dealt with that.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what I was gonna say. I was like, but ultimately this isn't really like any of the other books that are exploring those topics, and I loved it for that. And it also still had that exact micro genre thread that I love. Yeah, messy gals being messy, here for that. Even though obviously sometimes it was really dark and really sad, it also contained so much joy as well. I just really loved it,
and just like fun and chatty and just really, yeah, I just loved reading it.
Yeah, a real treat. I can't wait. So apparently I think in 2022 Tori Peters has like several novellas that have been released in the US, yes, but not in the UK. They're coming out in the UK, and I believe they're coming straight to paperback to keep them affordable, which is really fucking cool. So I'm definitely going to snap those up and read those. I just can't wait to read everything else that she puts out.
Agree. How about you? What's your next number?
Okay, well, keeping on theme, the next one for me is going to be The Appendix by Liam Kohneman.
Oh, I have not read this, but I would like to. Have you not read
it
yet?
It is so good. So basically, this is nonfiction. It's from the 404 Inkling series. And basically, Liam, so he's an Australian trans dude living in the UK, and he started documenting every instance of transphobia that he was coming across in the UK media. And he was calling the project The Appendix. And basically, it was starting to destroy him because the volume was just out of control. And so he ended up shifting the focus of the project to focusing on joy instead. And it's just such an incredible achievement. I was so moved by it, even though I feel like I really try and keep up with what's happening in the UK, and I try and keep up with like trans politics. There's still like, as a cis person, there's just still so much that, you know, like, I don't know, just reading how it's impacted this one person, someone who like I follow online, who I kind of vaguely know through like their work with 404. Yeah, it just touched me, man. And I feel like it's something that everyone should read. It's a really dinky, accessible book. I also like, it's like a nice companion piece to something like The Transgender Issue by Sean Fay, which has obviously been absolutely everywhere. But that one is less personal.
Mm.
You know, like that one operates on a kind of wider, more general political level. Whereas The Appendix is something that's so from the heart, like only Liam could have written it. And yeah, I feel like everyone should read it. I cannot recommend it enough.
I will definitely read it. Please do. I have it, and I've been thinking, I got to get around to this. And then for some reason, I just have not. And now I will.
Good, good, good. Okay. What's next on your list?
Next on my list is the Dinky Little Scratch by Rebecca Watson.
Oh, shit. That should be on my list, and it's not. I think did I read it last year, maybe? Oh, I don't know. Anyway, yes, love it.
I loved it. It's, you know, very kind of, it looks different to other books on the page. It is very kind of formally inventive, and I just loved everything that it did with language, and it was just a delight to read. And it's just the kind of chronicle of one young woman's day at work while she is wrestling with various things going on in her life. And I just loved the way that it's told from this very kind of deep inside her brain perspective, and the way that that's represented on the page.
It's just so creative. I feel like it really straddles that space between like poetry and prose. I love that like stream of consciousness kind of mixed with, yeah, like it made me think of, you know, Lanny, the bits in Lanny, yeah, where it's the villagers, their conversations.
Voice, yeah.
Oh, I just love it so much. I love that kind of creative topography. It just makes it like a really joyful reading experience, even when, you know, it's not so joyful.
Agree. And it was because of this book that we discovered the Women's Prize has a minimum word count, which this did not meet.
Yes! Oh, which was such a fucking tragedy, because I felt like it would have really sat well amongst that long list.
Agreed.
Slash short list. So yeah, sad times, but it did end up, didn't it get recognised? Who did it get recognised by? Was it the Goldsmiths?
Maybe. I've seen it on a shortlist this year, but I cannot think which one.
And you know what I'm going to say? I feel like that one, along with at least The Appendix and also another one that we haven't mentioned yet, super short books that you can just read in a day or two over the Christmas holiday.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you just settle down, start with a little cup of tea, finish with a little mulled wine, a couple of hours, you're going to be in heaven.
Agree.
Okay, next on my list is another one that I don't think you will have included. This is Everyone in This Room Will Someday Be Dead by Emily R. Austin.
Yes, which I loved, and again, would have been in my honourable mentions. Loved it, had a great time reading it.
I feel like it's the kind of book where you can really see why I loved it.
Yes.
You know, like, it just really ticked a lot of boxes for me, you know? Like, it's quite horrible. Again, we have a messy young woman living her horrible life. So it's about a young woman who, at the beginning of the book, she has a severe anxiety disorder. She cannot stop thinking about death. She ends up responding to a flyer for free therapy at her local church, but accidentally wanders into a job there working as a receptionist to replace a recently deceased woman called Grace. Being in this role, taking on this dead woman's job, is like the worst thing it can do for her brain, because she's just completely obsessed with this loss and ends up kind of conducting an amateur investigation into her death. It's very warm and very funny, which it kind of balances out how morbid it is, because it's really morbid. If you have health anxiety that's easily triggered, don't read this one, because this woman is... she's got all sorts of things that she's worried about, and she will make you worry about them too.
Yes.
Yeah, but I just absolutely loved it. Again, it's one of those books that as soon as I started it, within a few pages, I was really taken in by it. And yeah, I just loved it. Easily a top 10 for me.
Excellent. Yeah, I really loved it. And I feel like it will appeal to gals of the pod.
For sure.
So,
your 10.
Next on my list is one I think you have still not read, and I respect that for you. Piranesi by Susanna Clarke. Which we witnessed.
God damn it.
Winning Women's Prize.
We did witness Susanna Clarke winning it, and it was incredibly moving.
It was truly delightful to hear her talk about the extreme struggles that she's experienced since writing Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, which is not actually a book I've been able to get through yet in my life, but I'm hoping that one day I do.
One day the time will be ripe.
One day the time will be right. The stars will align. But yeah, she talked about at the Women's Prize ceremony how basically she was so ill after the publication of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell that she feared she would not write another book. So for her to have written another book and for it to be as exciting and strange and delightful as Piranesi, I am so happy for her. Piranesi is very hard to explain what it's about. So I would just say you should read it. It's got a lot going on, and it is a small little book, so it manages to do a lot of very wild stuff in not a lot of time. And for that, I respect her.
Yeah, I feel like at this stage, if you're in any way interested in unusual fiction, take that to mean whatever you like, at this stage you can't really get more praise than winning the Women's Prize. Like, that's pretty high up there, isn't it, as far as accolades go? What more do you want?
So true.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I'll get to it.
I'm sure you'll get to it, and I think you will probably enjoy it. I get why, like, for me as well, I looked at it and I was like, probably not for me, like, not really my vibe, and then I'm so happy that I did read it. So I hope that you have the same experience in the fullness of time.
You know what it kind of reminds me of, though? It kind of reminds me of Circe, in that I look at it, even though Circe is really easy to explain, but I never in a billion years imagined that I would love Circe, and
yeah.
I fucking loved it.
Yeah, there's always potential to surprise, especially when, you know, even if it's not a concept that you're necessarily into, if it is executed well enough, can be very enjoyable.
Yes, agreed. Okay, next on my list. Okay, now I'm down to things that I'm positive that you will have pulled out. So I'm just going to read them in order that I've got them. The first one I've got is Mrs. Caliban.
Yeah, so that I can't figure out what I would swap out for Mrs. Caliban, but that would definitely be my number 11. Because I just, ooh. I really struggled with like what to slash in exchange for Mrs. Caliban. So,
okay.
Continue.
So Mrs. Caliban is one that we have discussed before. It was a Faber reissue. It's by Rachel Ingalls.
Yep.
And it's about a woman. She, at the very beginning of the book, meets a kind of amphibian man. And that's all I really want to say about it. It's very much like Shape of Water-esque.
Yes.
In fact, insofar as The Shape of Water was almost certainly inspired by Mrs. Caliban in one way or another. And I was enjoying this book. Like, I was just, it's very short. I was enjoying it. I thought it was fine. But then when I realized what it's actually about, like, when you get to the end, the last sort of, however, 30 pages, it absolutely blew my tits off. Jumped into my top 10. I suddenly really, really loved it. So, yeah, I don't want to oversell it. I just think it has this very kind of cozy, it's written in a very cozy tone that I personally don't particularly like. I'm really glad that I stuck with it though, because it ends up just so much darker, so tightly plotted. Yeah, really, really loved it.
Me too. So that was in our episode about ladies getting intimate with animals and creatures, which was a couple of months ago, and we did it with that book and also Bear by Marianne Engel.
Can I just say, for each of these books, I'm trying to pull them up on the Waterstones website so I have things like character names to hand and that. And the Waterstones website is so frustrating that if you get a single letter of an author's name wrong, it doesn't come up.
Never heard of it. Does not know what you're talking about.
Yeah, like even the last book that I was trying to search was Everyone in This Room Will Someday Be Dead. And I, in my version that I'd copy and pasted from somewhere, the author's name is spelled Emily R. Austin. In the UK, it wasn't published with that middle initial. The middle initial meant the Waterstones website couldn't find it.
Pathetic.
This is why, as a bookseller, I used to use the Amazon website to navigate the internet. Because it, sadly, that algorithm is just better.
Yeah, it knows what you want. It's not exactly trying to be all clever.
Anyway, yeah. That's Mrs. Caliban. And yeah, we mentioned earlier They by Kay Dick.
Yep.
Yeah, that's part of the same series of Faber reissues. They are so fucking good. I feel like the Faber archivist is incredible. But yeah, like this series has just been absolute bangers. I can't wait to see what else they release. I will read them all. I'm just so into it.
Well, on that note, that next on my list is Come Closer by Sarah Graham.
Yes.
Which is also a Faber reissue. And we've mentioned it loads and loads of times. I will tell you again, it is about a woman who becomes possessed by a demon. And that is literally all it's about. And it is so good. It is so gnarly and nasty and dark and nightmarish. And I loved it. And I would recommend it to anyone.
Again, another one that I think I read this in 2 hours one morning. So yeah, perfect to read over the Christmas period. Just sink into it, have a horrible time, come out gasping for air, have a mince pie, you'll be grand.
I loved Come Closer.
Yeah.
So that's my favourite reissue pick of the year.
And then I've only got 2 left on my list. How many have you got left?
I've got like 5. No.
Really?
Yeah, I've got 5.
You have 5? Oh, it says I've been ticking off books that you've talked about as well.
Yes.
Okay, I know that at least 2 of mine are going to be on your list. Okay, next I'm going to do Open Water.
Caleb Azuma Nelson, also on my list.
Of course it fucking is. So this is one that I bought from Waterstones Piccadilly probably over the summer with like a big stack of novellas. I bought like 5 of them. And then I was really like, oh, I have this really bad habit of if I buy a new book, they tend to go straight into my main library and I forget about them unless I read them immediately. Whereas proofs, I line up on the back of my sofa. So that's why I tend to end up prioritizing proofs because I see them every day. So I was like, you know what? I spent loads of money on all these novellas. I need to read them for the end of the year. So I started working my way through this stack. Open Water is so fucking beautiful. Like, Okay, so it's about a young dude set in, I think, like 2017-ish, 2018-ish, living in London. The protagonist doesn't have a name. He falls in love with his friend's girlfriend.
Who also does not have a name.
Who also doesn't have a name. Yeah, it's like nameless characters. But he's a photographer, she's a dancer. They become really close friends. And although she breaks up with his friend, so she is, they are both single, they can't quite, for half the book anyway, they can't quite bring themselves to really cross over, to cross that line. So like they share a bed from time to time, they hang out religiously. She's back and forth from Dublin, so she's not always around. And God, it's both about that incredible yearning, how much this narrator wants this woman, how well they fit together in theory, but then also about the emotional intensity of being a young black man. And it's about the grief that he experiences and how he never really has an outlet for that grief. He can't quite, over the series, over the book, he loses a series of people who are very close to him. He never really manages to open up to her or to anyone, not truly, like, open up about how he feels about this loss and how he can reconcile, like, his place in society and the place of these men that he has lost. It's just so heartbreakingly beautiful. It really took my breath away. It knocked the wind out my lungs. And yeah, I cannot recommend it enough.
Agree. Truly one of my faves of the year. I only read it this week. I think we both read it this week. And then it has instantly gone into the old top 10. I loved it because I love it. I felt like it felt more like the London that I live in than most books I read that are also set in London. It was one of the only books I've ever read in my life that is set in a place called Bellingham, which most people have probably never been to, but I know, you know, it's just, it felt so representative of like an actual world that I see every day. And I also loved all of the kind of little chats about like black art and music and filmmaking. It just felt so, you know, for a book that is like 146 pages long, it really has so much stuff in it, and it is so, every single page, every single line, so beautiful. And yeah, truly, truly loved it.
Yeah, this for me on a line level is like what I think of when I think of like literary fiction, like poetic, beautiful, even effortless, you know, like it's not, it never stretches to reach that kind of poetry, you know. Yeah. Like it feels very effortless on the page, which I think is just so admirable. I think it's also an absolute fucking travesty that this wasn't on the book along list.
Yeah, ridiculous. At least it's on, like, the Costa, it's like shortlisted for the Costa First Book Prize I've seen recently, which is nice.
Yes,
but yeah, ridiculous that it was not, yeah, more, but recognized.
It's nice, but I always so I don't know if I'm really wrong on this, but I always associate the Costa with slightly more commercial fiction and the Booker with more literary. Maybe I'm wrong. I can't remember who else is on the list this year.
Manning Tree Witches.
Oh, okay.
The Stranding and one other. Let me have a look.
Yeah, those are quite literary though, aren't they?
Yes. The Stranding by Kate Sawyer. The Manning Tree Witches by A.K. Blakemore. Open Water by Kayla Bazuma Nelson, as we are discussing right now. And then the fourth one is Fault Lines by Emily Atami, which I have not read.
Okay, yeah, me neither.
So but those feel quite...
they are more literary. Yeah,
that definitely feels like a kind of departure from a more commercial vibe. But yes. Yeah, still ridiculous. Yeah, I thought it was completely ridiculous that Open Water was not at least long-listed for the Booker.
Yeah, agreed. Oh, well, anyway, let this be your sign. If you're listening to this pod and you're interested in reading one of the most beautifully written books of the year, let this be your sign to go and get it. I think it's even out in paperback now.
I bought it in hardback last week from Waterstones Piccadilly, who had lots of signed copies. So I don't know if it is out in paperback yet, or if they just happen to have lots of signed copies around that they were trying to sell.
Either way. What's next on your list?
Next on my list is The Service by Frankie Mirren.
And that was last on mine.
How harmonious.
What you got?
You chat about it, because I've still got two left on my list.
Okay, so The Service by Frankie Mirren. This is an influx book. It's about sex work in the UK. So it's from three different perspectives. So we have a journalist who's made it her life's work to try and to make it illegal.
Yeah, so she's also particularly incensed by the sex robot clubs. That's her current obsession, yes. Is the opening of sex robot clubs.
And then we have Laurie, who is working illegally from a rented flat. So her flat is illegal because there's multiple women who are working from there. So it's technically a brothel, even though they are independent workers. And then there's a student as well called Freya, who has just started in her kind of sex work journey. So yeah, it's about how these three characters are all involved in one way or another in the world of sex work and how their stories come together and how they also fracture. And then on a wider note, it's about kind of the situation in the UK at the moment with the kind of the politics, the raids, brothels being raided by the police, and the kind of increasing threat to these women's livelihoods and what sex work, what the landscape looks like. So it's like about power and privilege and sex relationships. It touches upon loads of stuff. But yeah, I absolutely loved this. I thought it was really compelling. All three characters were really well-rounded and really believable. And it also does that thing that I think is really difficult to do in fiction, where it's actually really informative and really smart, but also tells a really cracking story.
Agree.
That's my evaluation.
It does a lot kind of political, you know, it gives you a very kind of accurate political understanding of what is going on right now in, like, what is at stake in sex worker politics right now. But it is also a great narrative. Like, it's a really good story. It's a really good, like, novel, as well as being a thing that helps you understand, like, what is being discussed and what are the consequences of different kind of pathways or different, like, experiences or the enforcement of law. And yeah, I just think it works so well. And yeah, I'm so happy for Frankie that it is just such a brilliant book.
And yeah, it was really well received. I feel like it really, I think that's like a real mark of the book as an achievement. Like, it has been really beloved by those who've read it, and I think it's gone quite far. So I'm excited to see what she does next. I hope that she's writing another one.
Me too.
And yeah, I hope that if you haven't already picked up The Service, I hope you do, because I think it's also, although I think in my years I have read so many books that have sex workers in them, I think this is the first time I have knowingly read a book by a sex worker. So I think that's really cool too.
Yeah. I mean, obviously we've had like non-fiction books, but to have like a
beg
novel
your pardon, yeah. From to read fiction.
A novel from the experience of a sex worker. I loved it. So,
right, you've still got three left.
No, I've still got two left, because one of mine was The Service. So, next on my list, I don't know if you've read this yet, is 56 Days by Katherine Ryan Howard.
No, I have not, but I'm really excited to.
Yeah,
I've just purchased it.
I was, you know, looking through my list of books. I've, you know, everything I've read this year, putting my little asterisk by things that I, you know, thought I would maybe want to put on my top 10. And yeah, that one just really jumped out at me. So this has been my year of Katherine Ryan Howard. I started reading her books maybe in like May, and like the first one I read in one day. And then as soon as I finished that, I started another one. She is so good. Like, in terms of kind of commercial contemporary thriller writers, she is my absolute favorite. And I'm, yeah, love her writing. And yeah, 56 Days, which came out this year, is set in the first lockdown in Ireland. And yeah, I mean, obviously we talked about this. I'm not necessarily like drawn to books about lockdown because they are about lockdown, but that one really worked for me. I just love everything she writes. I think she finds interesting stories and just manages to tell them in the juiciest way possible. So I would strongly recommend 56 Days to anybody who wants a really juicy thriller that they will just go and suck it all up in one go and then read all her other books.
So I just bought it, and I think it's one that I'm going to save for the Christmas holidays. I think that's what I'm really feeling right now, is I want to be carried in the way that The Nothing Man carried me.
Which was one of her previous books.
So gripping. So gripping. And that one was based on the Golden State Killer very loosely. And then a kind of like just a fictionalized version set in Ireland. But yeah, I'm really excited to read this one. And yeah, I think it's really interesting to see, we are starting to see pandemic fiction, because it's been, you know, it's been almost 2 years. So we are starting to see that, like, that fiction popping up. I remember at the beginning of the pandemic, so many people were so cunty about the very theory, the very thought of pandemic fiction. Whereas I'm open to it. Yeah, it's not necessarily something that I'm like, would be seeking out on purpose.
Yeah.
From an author whose thrillers I've previously loved. Yeah, like, I'm well up for it. I'm interested. I'm ready.
100%. So, yeah, I feel like, you know, maybe have not been reading as many thrillers this year by anyone other than Catherine Ryan Howard, but she's so good.
She's
filled my quota of thrillers for the year anyway. So then finally on my list is another less overt thriller, but one I know you have read, Other People's Clothes by Calla Henghor.
Oh, shit. Okay. Yeah, I know why we ended up out of sync, because I noticed about 10 minutes ago, there's only 9 books on my top 10 list. I must have missed one out. I think I accidentally deleted Other People's Clothes, because that should be in my top 10.
Oh, fine. Then we have ended on a mutual high note.
God.
Would you like to describe this book?
Okay, so Other People's Clothes is set in Berlin. It's about an American student who heads over on her Erasmus, and she ends up moving into this, like, very odd little flat with a fellow student. The flat is owned by a very famous writer, a famous mystery writer. And basically, as they start, like, living their lives in Berlin, like, spending their nights going out clubbing, their days, like, hungover, they begin to suspect that this writer, Beatrice Bex, is watching them. It's so good. They kind of end up becoming super paranoid. They're convinced that she is using their lives as the kind of jumping off point for her next novel. So they start kind of orchestrating their lives to be good source material.
Yeah, they start kind of performing for her and having these elaborate parties in their flats that really, like, take off and become, like, a thing.
Just, it's just such a great premise. It's so gripping. And it all goes absolutely tits up. Again, it's in my favourite little micro-genre. There is also this really great kind of subplot that the student, her name's Zoe, is in the process of coming to terms with the loss of her high school best mate, who was murdered right before she moved to Berlin. So there's this, like, very kind of, and it's all kind of kicking off at the same time as, is it set in 2007? 2009.
Yeah, so it's set just after the murder of Meredith Kircher and Amanda Knox becoming famous by virtue of that murder.
So, like, that kind of runs in parallel to their story. Like, you keep getting these, like, cultural touchstones, like Amanda Knox, Lindsay Lohan, Britney Spears, that kind of thing. It's just so good, isn't it? Like, it's such a rich kind of, the rich tapestry of 2009. I just found it so gripping. I really loved it. I really loved the backdrop. I really loved Berlin. I really loved the intensity of their friendship and the way that it's destined to sour. Just does it for me.
Agree. I loved everything about this book. I am so happy. I mean, we were sent it. I thought it looked interesting. But I did not feel the cover and the presentation of the book really sold to me what the book was. So I'm really glad that we were offered an interview with her, which meant I had to read the book in order to do the interview, because I had the time of my bloody life reading this book. And yeah, I do not necessarily feel that the way that the book was marketed was entirely representative of the contents, and I think a lot of people may pass this book by because they do not get what it is.
So I'm gonna actually fully blame the cover.
Yeah,
because I'd recently found, as I was like My house is just a little rat's nest of book related crap, and I found this stack of postcards that were sent with me, sent to me rather, with the original proof I got that I was sent. And the postcards are really banging and really cool, and they're like Berlin themed. One is like Blood, Sex, Death, Berlin. Another is like all these like half drunk wine glasses and cigarette ends and stuff, and it's fucking wicked. And it's like designed like a flyer for the club that they set up in the flat. It just looks really cool. And I was like, I was missing this energy from the cover of the book, which adopted that same kind of shade of red that's on the cover of Mrs. March, which I just don't think is a sinister shade of red. It says, I don't know, like cranberry lip balm to me. It doesn't quite like capture the kind of seedy, dark underbelly of Berlin, the clubbing scene, hangovers, you know, like all the stuff that makes this book really kind of gritty and interesting. It just wasn't quite there. So I hope the paperback is different.
I'll be really interested to see if and how they change the cover for the paperback.
Yeah, me too. I just think that something that captures the vibrancy and the darkness of the book a little more accurately would hopefully benefit.
I think it's also interesting that, you know, something we've talked about quite a lot is there is this tiny little subgenre of books that you go into expecting them to be quite dark and then they're not, either because of the title you expected them to be quite dark, or because of the cover, or because of the quotes from other authors. Yeah, like the blurb, the way that the plot's been represented to you, or because of something that, like, an author has said about it that has gone on the cover. And I feel like this is the opposite of that, in that it does not look as dark as it is.
Agreed. And I wonder if part of it is that quiet literary books, such as the example that I will pluck, because I ended up loving the book, so I don't feel bad saying it, The Woman in the Purple Skirt. Have I talked about that one on here before?
No.
It's a Japanese book put out by Faber. Let me just grab the author's name. Natsuko Imamura. So this one, the blurb makes it sound really sinister. A woman obsesses, stalking this woman in a pub skirt that she sees every day. Yeah. It's actually not it's nowhere near as sinister as the blurb made out. It's actually a really brilliant book, though, about loneliness and obsession and how, you know, if you have an emptiness inside you, you will find something to fill it, whether or not it's necessarily the best thing for you to spend your time obsessing over. But it's a meditation on loneliness, and it's really brilliant, but not what I was expecting from it. It's that kind of frustrating energy where, like, that feeling that maybe this a quiet book about loneliness needs an edge to get it to sell, but then actually these books that are really sinister, but clearly the publishers don't want to market them as thrillers, because the thriller market right now, I feel like, not to do a disservice to any of the wonderful thrillers that are being published, but I feel like they've been pushed in a very specific direction of, like, domestic psychological thrillers. That there are quite a few that are churned out with very similar covers. They feel quite disposable, with the exception of, you know, some of the kind of, they're not quite brand authors, but with the exception of people like Erin Kelly, Will Dean, Megan Abbott, you know, these kind of names that have been going for a while that have quite a big kind of catalogue of books behind them. Yeah, there's obviously, like, some kind of reticence to position stuff like literary thrillers as thrillers. Like, this kind of desire to nudge them more into the kind of general fiction category, which I find really frustrating, because it just makes it more difficult for me to find the books that I want to read.
Yeah, and like, it's just inaccurate. Like, it is, I mean, it is a kind of, it is literary fiction, but fundamentally, I mean, and it is structured the way a thriller would be structured as well, where you get the ending first.
Yes. Yeah, 100%.
So, I don't know what went on with this, but I loved it, and I think more people should read it. And if you listen to the pod, you should definitely read it.
Yeah, you'll love it. Guaranteed good time.
So, we've just discovered that there was another book on my list. We're back. I did not name 10 books. I only named 9. I've just discovered there was one.
Imagine I'm so what you want to say.
Well, you maybe cannot imagine it, because I do not think you have read it. It is My Phantoms by Gwendolyn Riley.
Oh, okay.
You have not read this?
No, I haven't read it.
I loved it. I read it a couple of weeks ago in like one go. It's another one of those, you know, quite short novels. I wouldn't say, maybe it's a novella. I don't know. But yeah, it's short, manageable novel. Have you read First Love by Gwendolyn Riley?
Nope, that was one of the novellas I picked up this year and intended to read and did not read.
That's on my list for the rest of the year, so I'm going to try and get to that, especially now that I have enjoyed My Phantoms, which was out this year, so much. It's just about a woman and her relationship, partially with her dad, who is horrible, and partially with her mum, who is... Sorry, her dad is now dead, but her mum is still alive, and is just not a happy person, and does not have a happy life, and just, yeah, just this incredibly, like, fraught relationship between a woman and her mum, who is a very difficult person to have in her life. And I just found it so, like, almost every single page made me profoundly unhappy, and yet I just think it's such a great book that I was willing to put up with being so miserable for so many pages.
Okay, I'm interested. I definitely read the first maybe 10 pages of First Love on my way home from the bookshop, and I really loved her writing style.
She is a great writer.
Yeah, like, immediately it, like, just, I vibed with it. So I'm definitely interested. Little ears are pricked.
Yeah, I would say give it a go. I would say, I obviously haven't read First Love, but I would say if you have My Phantoms, give it a go. If you don't, I will lend it to you because I have a physical copy. And it has such a good cover. It has this, like, black and white photo of a kind of country house looking thing. But it's got this kind of ominous green, like, slimy green vibe as well. Ooh. I love it. It's got such a good cover. And yeah, the book just bangs. And I cannot recommend it enough. But you have to be prepared to be quite unhappy as you read it.
Always prepared to be unhappy.
So yeah, that is my 10th book that somehow I deleted from my list while we were talking, just like you deleted Other People's Clothes by Calla Henkel.
Exactly.
Because we are so in sync. So that was my last one.
Oh, that brings us to the end of 2021. That's it.
No more time to be alive.
No more books. It's over. I think that this year has been a really strong reading year for me, though. Even though I definitely felt like I've read much slower, I've definitely read fewer books per month, I think my overall year has been really strong.
Agree. And, you know, as I know from my own experience, it is hard to read a lot while you're also writing a lot. Those two things do not necessarily happily coexist.
They don't. And I really hope that I have found a pace that suits me. You know, the days of reading 10 books a month are over for me. I'm not going to be achieving that in 2022 either, and that's fine. I'm going to be reading 4 books a month, and I'm just going to pick them carefully and make sure that everyone is a banger. That's the
Bethany
goal.
Rutter approach.
Yes, exactly. Quality over quantity.
Indeed. Well, my friend, what a nice year we've had.
Oh, I can't wait for 22. We're going to have a year of bangers. A year
including Welcome to Your Life by Bethany Rutter.
Yes, the wait is over.
You know, maybe I'll take this opportunity in the last poddy of the year to say that it would be very appreciated by me if you would like to pre-order Welcome to Your Life. As people have mentioned many times, and many authors have mentioned, pre-orders are very important to authors, and I'm sure Alice will be doing exactly the same thing this time next year in anticipation of Death of a Bookseller being published in 2023. But yeah, pre-orders are really important. So
they make a big difference.
They make a big difference. And if you would like to buy a gift for your future self, this is a really good way to do it. So if you are thinking that when my book comes out, you are going to buy it, maybe you should pre-order it instead, and I would love you very much for that. It would be very nice of you.
Especially if you're going to buy it anyway.
Exactly.
Why not do a little pre-order?
And you know, obviously, physical copies, great, beautiful. But remember, if you pre-order it on the Kindle, on the day that it comes out, you will just wake up and it will just be there. Like, you won't even have to wait for the post. So
it'd be like Santa came.
Exactly. Except Santa is a hot, sexy bitch called Bethany Rutter.
Cool. All right, on that note.
Well, goodbye, my friends. It has been a delightful year.
Bye! Bye.